Welcome to episode 209 of the Board Game Barbecue podcast. I am your host tonight, Adrian, and I'm joined by two fellow Victorians in Dan and Mike. How you doing, Dan?
Doing really well, Adie. How are you?
Yeah, good. Very good. And yourself, Mike? How you doing, bud?
Good, man. Ready to roll. I'm excited to talk some games.
Yeah, I have played a lot of games over the past few weeks because we moved house and had a bunch of other stuff happening on and excavation works and stuff. So I've just been flat out busy. But this is the first time for at least maybe 6 weeks where I've actually sat down and just played a lot of games, you know, back to back almost. And yeah, refreshing. Loving it. I'm loving the games I got to play. And I got to teach a lot of games at Comic-Con. We went to Comic-Con. Oh, nice. And it was really a different experience, actually, because I'm used to going to the game days where I'm playing with people that have been playing games way longer than I have, you know, for years, you know, and lots of the people there, even though there's people new to the hobby there, most people have a grasp of certain mechanics and they all know different games and are willing to teach each other different games and, you know, share the experience of the day. Whereas a lot of the people that I played with Comic-Con, some of them had never played a board game. Like they're like, have you played Scrabble or Uno? They're like, no. I
was like, oh wow,
okay, cool.
Not even the M game that shouldn't be named.
Yeah, I never asked that question because it shouldn't be named, so I left that one out. But like, yeah, there's just a lot of people that hadn't played games, and some people that had played a decent amount of games, and they're just looking to try something different and try something new. But yeah, I played, I taught Skull back to back like the whole weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's quite funny because, you know, like when you've played those games quite a lot when you got them and then they kind of peter off and they kind of get dust on the shelf and get pulled out as much and it gets much love. Man, I just found new love for that game again. And not that I've ever disliked it. I've always loved it. But it's just a game that, I mean, it looks like it's been through 50 years worth of plays because we have played it a lot, but it's always nice when you haven't played it for a couple of months and then it just has this massive resurgence and you play it back to back games and have a great time with it. And that went down really well. And Skull Cockroach Poker. And I actually got to play a new game that I'd never played before. And that was, I'm going to say it wrong. I think it's Taco Goat Cheese.
Taco cat goat.
I always miss out the cat. I don't like cats anyway, so it's fine. I'm a dog.
The perennial should favorite be, from Think
should
of
be
Thema.
Taco dog.
Or by Think of Thema, I mean.
It should be
Taco because of Amy. I now own three versions of that game.
Yeah, okay, wow. Fair play. But you know what?
I don't think I have the original either. I think mine's got cake in it.
Oh, really? Oh, you got the birthday one. Yeah, I've seen that one.
Kids.
Okay.
How'd you like it, 80?
I actually loved it. I had a great time playing that game, and I played that a lot. I mean, that was kind of like the game that was like, it's almost like the ultimate gateway game because
it's
fun. It's like, it's engaging because everyone's trying to, you know, get their hand into the pile and get involved. But it was just simple rules. Yeah, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great, and I actually won it the first time I played it. And like, you know how like you have to, I don't know if anyone else here knows the premise of the game, but people here on the pod have spoken about it before, but it's kind of like you're chanting out the names of the five items. And as soon as someone says the word and the card gets flipped over and it's the same sort of the word matches the word, you have to grab the pile, basically put your hand in the middle. And I won it on a finger technicality. So my little finger was underneath the other person's hand and my other three fingers were above. And then I was like, whoa, 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 everyone take their hands away really slowly. And then they slowly pulled their hands away and it was just my little finger that had won it. They let me win it. So it was great.
But were there any injuries? That's the main question.
His little finger was on it. It was broken, but his little finger was on the bottom.
You didn't play it properly if there's no injuries or blood drawn.
I did play it later in the day. That's with someone who was in like a crazy like anime cosplay outfit with nails that were like designed to scratch. And yeah, even she apologized a few times to people for diving in and stabbing people's hands.
I've contemplated buying a pack of like cotton gloves to make people wear when we play Taco Cat Go Cheese Pizza, because it's so violent with everyone slamming the table so
you
quickly.
You say that so well. I still forget the cat.
I've played it that many times recently, man. That's my big gateway game at the moment, and I've been playing it a lot. And so that's why I know it.
It went down really well, and I tell you what else went really well was So Clover was really popular, Just One was really popular, and it was really good because you could, like, at Comic-Con it's very different. It's a different audience, like I said, so a lot of these people haven't played games. And a lot of people
it's a passing
assumed,
crowd as well, so no one has time to, they generally don't have time for hour or 2 hour games, and so you need something that's going to grab their attention and give them a great experience in a short amount of time.
It was kind of funny when people were like playing the games and then be like, okay, cool, so do you sell these? And I'm like, no, we're not a shop. Like, and the premise of that is like, what are you doing here? Like, we're just like playing games. And they're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, that's fair enough. As long as you're enjoying it. And I was like, yeah, it's great. Get to hang out and play that's games. But yeah, another one that went down really well actually was there was a guy there who was playing games with his son all day. And I'd say that the son was in his mid-20s and the dad would be in sort of 50s or 60s. And like, they played games all day and they were getting rule books out and reading the rules to games and just playing them themselves. And then the following day I said, oh, I got a game that I'll show you. And I took my copy of Fleet the Dice Game. So I knew it was a little bit heavier, but not like, not ridiculous. And also, you know, someone that's played games and you could kind of get a grasp of like what they're playing and you know, what they liked and what they didn't like. And I said, oh, I'll bring this game in tomorrow. If you're around, we'll play it. And the guy was there at like 9:30, as soon as the doors open, he was straight back in playing games again. I said, oh, I brought that game, we'll play it. And I showed them Fleet, and halfway through the game, I actually went and helped another group play something else, but MJ took my sheet and finished it off. But he actually loved the game so much and had never heard of it and took the sheet home with him and was like, I'm going to buy this game and I'm going to beat my score and think
that's
of my strategy
awesome.
Of what
that's
I did. And he really enjoyed it. So that was really cool.
But that's what it's all about, man. If you can give someone that experience, that makes the whole convention worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Mm. And there was a lot of, definitely a lot of people playing entry-level games, which is great. And people who'd never played games before were playing multiple entry-level games and having a great time. So that's definitely, you know, the vibe and the message that we were sort of sending out. So, but you just want a massive thanks to Matt and G Money and Tara and MJ, who actually volunteered their time and helped over those 2 days, because they were very long days, but they were great. So yeah, it was a really good experience.
And speaking of Comic-Con, we just had the Sydney one on the weekend gone, and Sarah and Mitch can't be here this evening because they're still knackered.
Recovering.
They're still exhausted for doing 2 days back to back. And we had some volunteers at the Sydney one as well. We had Stu and JB and Uber. So yeah, thanks to them for volunteering as well. And I know that Sarah posted in our little sort of group chat that she taught So Clover, Cockroach Poker, Nedevilia, Nova Luna. I think she even taught Twilight Inscription.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Some poor souls who are happy to sit there and learn that one at a Comic-Con. Scout as well, she said. So
yeah, it was awesome. Good. It was a different crowd, and I enjoyed teaching those games and, you know, hanging out with people that we don't get to see, and hopefully they enjoyed the board games and will continue in their personal lives playing some board games rather than
and join the community.
Yeah, that's it. So but other than that, I just want to talk about this one piece of news that I saw yesterday that I would like to kind of maybe even more Mike's gauge. Yeah, for sure. Like, the new Terraforming Mars is a Roll-n-Write.
I tried to Google this as soon as I saw this writing. I'm like, what? And I couldn't find it. I need more information. I thought you accidentally wrote that thinking you were writing Twilight Inscription. That's what I thought you did.
No.
So tell me more.
So The Podfather, which is Stephen Bonacore's podcast, and obviously he was a big part of Stronghold Games, and Terraforming Mars itself, he had an announcement, I think yesterday, that was going live. And I actually, before the announcement happened, I'd seen that he'd like put a placeholder in for like a live announcement on his Facebook page, and I could see a Terraforming Mars map with some dice in the background. And I was like, ooh, I wonder if they're not supposed to put that bit on yet. But in my head, I was like, that looks like a Terraforming Mars kind of roll and ride. Apparently that's what it's going to be. There's going to be some kind of a Terraforming Mars roll and ride game. So they're all doing it, eh? Like, I mean, if TI and Terraforming Mars has a roll and ride, what is next? Like,
it's a growing genre though. Like,
yeah,
it's one of those genres that when I first got in the hobby, I was snobby to it and I thought I wouldn't like it until I tried a few and realized this medium can offer a whole new range of games that I can play, and I really enjoyed them. And I think, I don't know, I think with things like Fleet and a bunch of other games, Cartographers, Silver and Gold, I think they've paved the way for this genre to start amping up a bit more and getting such a big box condensed into such a small box that you can play with maybe more people and less setup. I think there's a lot of incentive there if people want the roll and write, especially for less setup. Like Hadrian's Wall is a really heavy roll and write, and what I have to do, put a bunch of meeples out just so you can grab them out of piles. There's not much setup, but it's a meaty, meaty game. And I think that's a really cool thing. If you want that meaty game but don't have the time for setup and pack down, you can just rip it out. I reckon that's awesome.
I think the real challenge is going to be, because like something like Hadrian's Wall or Fleet, well, even Fleet was based on the card game. They turned it into a dice game, but they succeeded because I played both, and the flavor is still there. So with this, it'd be interesting to see if they can make it a roll and write game but still keep the flavor and keep the essence of Terraforming Mars, or whether that's completely lost because of the dice and the writing and the paperwork as well. It'd be interesting to see how they make that transition.
Yeah. I could almost start to imagine it in my brain, like checking off as the production goes up for different things. But with so many resources coming in and out, I think they'd almost have to have like a Hadrian's Wall, something you can hold and put resources in and out. I'm very curious. But
It does actually lend itself to a checklist sort of thing, the way you're building up a tableau and things. So, you know, you go back to it every round and get those benefits.
I'm just waiting for Roll and Pipeline, the Roll and Pipe game. That's why I want Roll and Pipe. I think Roll and Pipe might send the wrong message, though.
Well, it's one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But and on that note, actually, I got to teach Pipeline at a friend's house the other night. We did a game night at Matt's house, actually. And it was really good. And we set it all up and the other guys who played the game also really enjoyed it, especially the guy that was sitting to my right. His name's Shane. And yeah, he really enjoyed it. And he could kind of see him start to get the puzzle towards the end of the game or to the midpoint of the game and not ask any questions, just start doing stuff. And that's kind of cool. It was nice. It was just a nice game night that I quite enjoyed. Always like a good excuse to teach that to someone. So
that's cool, man.
My sizzling game for this week, I'm going to just jump in straight up and say that it was actually my oath as well. So we now, spoiler, know that I got my oath completed, which is great, because that doesn't happen often. Not on time anyway. It's usually like 6 months after, like the Blackout Hong Kong affair. But man, Food Chain Magnate, I loved it. Like I really loved it. And it was really strange because like I knew that I wanted to play it, but I didn't realize how much I'd enjoy it. And it does actually remind me of Barrage a little bit to a degree.
Oh, really?
You don't necessarily block people, but you can steal everything from someone. And that's quite interesting. But it's a great game. I've already ordered the expansion because I thought it was fantastic. It's an expensive game for what you get. Like, I'm definitely going to say that out. So I think it's just cards and a few pieces. But it's definitely, I feel like it's all of the mechanics have been really finely tweaked and really well balanced, I suppose. And the way the game plays, I think that's where the investment was placed, because it's mechanically really interesting. So for those who don't know Food Chain Magnate, it's kind of set in the sort of 1950s style of like these diners and fast food eateries across the States. And it just sort of sings that with the cards. The cards are basically the people that you're hiring to come and work in your establishment. You usually play a CEO. You always have your card placed out in front of you when you start to do the order of business, and you start off with just you, and you get a couple, you buy a card basically, and you might just have, you know, a waitress that gets you the $5, which is the Mitch strategy, where you just try to keep buying waitresses to make money, which in hindsight, playing this game a few times, I can't see that as a viable thing to ever work. Mm. Sorry, Mitch, but someone might prove me wrong, but
no one ever knows Mitch to win games anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. It's got this really interesting thing where it's like you start as the CEO at the top. And if you imagine like looking at a family tree, yeah, you actually like place the people underneath you, right? So you start at the top, then you can have three workers underneath you. They could be a marketing trainee, an errand boy, and a waitress, for example. But as you play the game, you could hire more managers, and those managers can have two or three people underneath them. So you start to build this huge cascading tree of actions, basically, that you can do throughout the game. And it definitely is one of those games where it starts off really slow. Like it's, your engine is nothing.
It's a slow build.
Real slow build, but it does ramp up incredibly fast. And like the way the game actually plays itself is you kind of place the employees sort of in front of you, you know, build your little sort of staff tree, if you will. And then you then basically, the more open slots that you leave. So like, imagine if you have a manager underneath you and he can have three workers underneath him. If you leave some of those slots free, so you don't actually fully load that manager up with other workers, that then changes the player turn order. So by leaving managers underloaded and not, you know, fully stacked out with lots of actions, you can then pick player turn order and end up going first. So going first can be really important in this game, like lots of these games. Then you just do the working phase, where basically you recruit employees, you train them, you can do all these different marketing campaigns and stuff. And that's how you score points, is by setting up these marketing campaigns in the different districts on the map, because the map is a smaller map for two players and a larger map for four plus. And you're trying to draw people towards your business with these marketing campaigns. And they all have these different mechanics that work completely differently from each other. You can market, I believe it's like by air, so that the actual plane flies across the top of the map, sort of letter dropping. And that's part of the mechanic, is that you try and hit these houses that are on the street blocks, but it's depending on how far, you know, how far away each house is how many you can almost click across. If you could just catch the ends of them, you'll advertise to them and you can draw them towards your business over other people's. And then there's the radio, and the radio is the kind of the best way, I suppose, the most efficient way, but you can also do letter drops and just drop letters into people's doors and attract them that way. It has a lot of these really interesting mechanics that really work well together, and it's incredibly cutthroat. Like I said, like in the last round of the game was losing. I managed to get a radio tower down and drag all of the business away from MJ before she could get any business. And I managed to get the majority of my points from that and steal the game, but it was only just. But yeah, it's a really interesting game. It's really fun to play. It's very heavy. Like, to the teachers a lot because there's a lot going on. And I know that I'm kind of almost muddling through this at the moment because I haven't played it for a couple of weeks, but it's just very unique. It's a very unique feeling game. And that's really important, I think, when you're buying these more expensive sort of heavier Euro games. You want a unique experience. You don't want to just buy something that you go, oh, I've got, it's just like this game already. I don't really need that in my collection. Whereas this is unique enough that it would stay in my collection hands down. So
nice.
Can I ask, I know it's usually a really expensive game. Does that come down to like the quality of the components, Adrian? Or is it just because it's such a unique game they don't release many? Do you know what it is that makes it expensive?
I couldn't speculate other than the fact that I would say it has been very heavily play tested to make it as balanced as possible. Because I've only played it 4 times. Like I feel like there's no inconsistency or something that's like really teetering over the game to be broken for one person or another.
Yeah. Does it have fancy components and bits or is it?
No, dude, it's just cards.
Oh, really?
And like, I mean, like it's got paper Monopoly money in it. Like that I haven't even opened. It's sitting right next to me.
It's funny because it's a bit of a table hog, isn't it? But at the same time, it looks kind of plain.
It is. It's very plain. But, and it's that style though. Like that 50s kind of pop, kind of rock and roll kind of style art, if you know what I mean. Like, but you know, the player aid comes on a menu, which is pretty cool, like a 1950s sort of 50s that's menu. Cool. And
I like that. Actually, you know what it is? It's the actual board itself. The is it the streets or the tiles you place down? That's why it sort of looks kind of plain when you initially set it up, I suppose.
It very much is. Like,
it looks
the tiles
you put down look like they're in playtest mode.
Yes, I would agree.
Whereas
with
everything
that.
Else. Like, everything else is really thematic with that sort of 50s art style that you mentioned with the diners and the menus and it looks really good. But have you only played it at 2 players?
I've played it now at 4 and at 2.
Okay, how long did a 4-player game go? Because BGG says it plays up to 4 hours.
Yeah, it was close to 4.
Really? Wow.
It's like I said, it's really slow at the start, man. Like it's got a really slow engine to get going, but once that thing starts to move, it seems to be kind of everybody in the group seems to come online at the similar time, so it's all go, and that is really interesting in itself, just how that ramps up to being with like all kind of those heavy Euros and engine builder games. They always start off with, you start off with nothing and you're like, I can't do anything with this, how am I going to get by? And then it just builds up and builds up and builds up. One of the other really interesting things as well is like training your employees. So there's a whole like inside this menu, I mean, you'd have to look it up online, but there's a whole training thing where you can actually train all the individual workers to do different things. So you can change like a junior vice president into a vice president to a senior vice president, but then you can then make him an HR director and then he can do a whole bunch of other different stuff from that. But that same senior vice president, you can change him to a CFO. You don't have to change him to an HR director. There's a path even right at the very end of this sort of quote unquote skill tree.
I was going to say, it just reminds me of
the skill tree. It's like a Diablo skill tree. Like that's exactly what it is. Yeah, it is.
Learn new skills and then suddenly you can move sort of laterally across the skill tree instead of going up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And one of the other really interesting things as well that I kind of neglected to mention near the start is that there's these achievements that you get throughout the game. So, for example, the first person that cooks a burger is entitled to get this bonus, which gives you a free burger cook, who's essentially like a chef who can make more burgers, right? But the interesting thing is that you take your action, Dan, and I know that you've now achieved this first burger produced, right? As the game goes round, I have till the end of that turn of play, that round, to copy almost what you've done so that we then both are entitled to gain that achievement. So it's not just you that gets it. So essentially everybody else can get it. But to be honest, there's so much to do and you're sort of trying to focus on your own stuff. I only used it a couple of times to get a couple of them that were really important to my strategy. But other than that, like, I'm not that bothered. I actually won my first game using just sodas, and I didn't make any burgers or pizzas. I just did the soda strategy and was just heavy on sodas and had trucks that were driving around all the streets picking up.
Well, it's worked for Coke and Pepsi for years, mate. So
exactly right.
What's the waitress strategy that I hear so much about?
So the waitress strategy is essentially you buy the first waitress, and the first person that gets the first waitress, I believe each waitress then gets an increase of like a $2 wage. So if you buy a waitress, she then has a $5 wage, right? Because you've got that inherent bonus. In the original, she started with three. And then you just basically keep buying as many waitresses as you can, so that every round, when it comes to kind of the quote unquote, like, income kind of a round,
right,
you're getting a lot of money coming in the door. Yep. But I haven't tried it myself, but I don't know. It just, like Mitch said, he's like, I didn't play the game. I just kept doing that. Like he said it himself. He didn't. And that to me isn't as enjoyable as trying to outwit someone or whatever. But
is the waitresses a limited resource? And so if you're buying up waitresses, does that stop other people from doing the same?
It would do eventually, but there's a lot of those in the deck. I wouldn't be able to tell you how many.
Only you get the bonus, yeah?
Well, if you buy a waitress, then they get a waitress in that same round. They would have that. But if they only have two waitresses, it's not that much money. Mm. It's only $4 like difference. Like,
right. So if you get that bonus, then you're better off leaning into it a bit just to capitalize on it. Each round.
Like all of them, you know, like the first errand boy, he gets a bonus of like, I think like one drink. Like, so every time he collects drinks, he gets a bonus one drink or something. So then you want to lean into collecting drinks because it's a decent source of income at the start. But yeah, the marketing thing's really the kind of interesting part of it, because you can advertise stuff and then people can actually draw your customers away from your restaurant and steal them from you. And that's where it gets really quite interesting.
Well, that's the magnate part of it, isn't it? Otherwise, you're just running a restaurant. But
yeah,
it's called Food Chain.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it was a great game, and it didn't disappoint, which was kind of the main reason why I bought it. Was like, I've always wanted to try it. I've always wanted to give it a go. And you know what? The rule book was fantastic. Like, it was a great rule book. It was not hard to get by. There's not a lot of iconography. There is quite a decent amount of text. But once the game started rolling, it was not a problem. So,
yeah, I'd be definitely keen to try it myself, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's a good game. It is on TTS and stuff as well. So, and the mod's pretty decent, so I can show a few at some point. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great game. I'm really, really, really interested in their other games now, though, because they've got that, is it Horseless Carriage that's coming out soon? That is like, looks really interesting in the fact that I know nothing about it. All I know is that Spotter have made it. It costs a lot of money to send over here, and I want it. But I know for a fact that Jace has actually bought a copy of this, so I'll try and piggyback on that and play it with him and see what I think. But yeah, it looks interesting. So, what about yourselves, guys? What's been played out of your places?
Well, I've just got back from we took the boys up to Ballarat for the long weekend, so we did all Sovereign Hill and Coral Castle and have a look around town, which
I saw
fun.
You guys
so,
panning for gold. Like, yeah, is that right?
We actually found a fleck of gold, which we were able to keep in like a little jar, a little vial with some water. So that'll be something Jack can take to school. It's not enough for me to take care of the mortgage, but but it's funny because there's some people there panning for gold that take it super seriously. It's
really?
Settle down, mate. You're on holidays. You're not here to make a second income.
Uncle with like seven kids who's just like, get out there, keep panning. You don't get your breakfast till you've panned enough gold.
Exactly. So, but as you do when we go on holidays, what do? We take some games. We take some games with us. So, Jen and I, we played. You might recall a couple episodes ago, I had Deckscape. There was a casino. Oh, was it? Dracula themed Deckscape that I did as an oath. But I had a second one that I picked up at the same time. It was called Heist in Venice, which I wanted to try playing with another person because I'd only done done it solo, the previous one. Heist in Venice, much better than the Dracula one. Yeah, we really enjoyed it. It did a few different things, which is what I like when you play quite a few of those exit games or unlock games. It's really interesting when they do something a little bit different to the rest of the games. And this one, it was a casino heist in Venice where there are six characters. And so Jen had three characters. I had three characters. And each character had their skill set. So one was a safe cracker. One was all about security cameras and electronics. One was about whatever. But each of those characters knew something about the casino, knew something about what we were trying to steal, knew something about the security network. And so as the story unveiled, it was you'd learn something. It's like, oh, I've got a guy who knows something about that. And so you can, it would play beautifully with six people because then everyone can assume one of the six characters and everyone has their own sort of little skill and ability. They know something about how the safe works. They know something about how the security systems work. Or once you get to the roof, they know how to avoid the guards and the cameras and da, da, da. So we really, really enjoy that. And you're not supposed to show the card to the person, but you can reveal as much as you want. And so whenever you have a game like that, you read the card and then you tell them or you interact with the game in whatever way you want to. So it makes it a bit more immersive because it's my knowledge. I'm explaining to Jen how to pick this lock because I know how to pick this kind of lock or whatever. There were a few puzzles that we didn't quite nail. I think there might have been one that we just went, we would never have got that. But for the most part, we did pretty well with most of them. I did enjoy it because, Jen and I are two peas in a pod, so we get each other where we think. We were able to bounce ideas.
Was it the theme that you preferred for this one, or was it everything about it?
No, I think there was the puzzles, the story, the way they had different characters. I really enjoyed that. As opposed to the other one, it was just, it could have been one person, it could have been a group of six people, but you're still only doing the same mission, which was to fight Dracula. Whereas this one, the roles, and it also had, and this isn't spoiling anything, but when you get to the casino, you actually take, because it's all cards, you take, I think it was like the top four cards, put that on one pile, then another four cards. And so those three piles equate to the three things that you can see in the casino right now. You can see the games, you can see the slot machines, and you can see the cage, for instance. And so the way you tackle it is completely up to you. But once you've completed them all, and there is a particular order in which you needed to do them, which the story sort of reveals itself, but there is a bit of sort of free thinking. Let's do this one first. We'll see if we can get that, and we'll come back to this slot machine. And then once we got back of house in the casino, the same thing happened again. So there was an elevator, there was a security room, and there was something else. And the way we tackled those puzzles and the way we tackled each one was completely up to us. So I really enjoyed that as well. It was completely different to the other Deckscape that I played. I would actually, because I came out of the other one a bit lukewarm. But this one, the Deckscape, the Heist in Venice, we really, really enjoyed that one.
So now you try more of them?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it didn't, and this isn't spoiling anything either, but we didn't actually have to, tear anything up or manipulate the deck in any way. So it's very easy to reset and sort of share with someone else. And, I would recommend Heist in Venice.
I'm pretty sure we did one Deckscape. I think there's one about a science lab or something.
Mm.
I think my mate gave me one to test because he was thinking about bringing it to his company.
Yep.
But we enjoyed it enough. Like, we had a good time with it. Yeah.
And I do like the fact that, and the other one did the same thing, is some of them, it'll be like, take the next six cards and you arrange it into a map or arrange it into a picture and then the seventh card or the next one will explain the puzzle itself. So they're not even just limited to just a card. Sometimes you have to put them together to actually create something. And now you have to work out maybe how to get from A to B without setting off an alarm, for instance, or whatever. Really, really cool. And the other quickie game that we played, so we played Deckscape on the first night after the kids went to bed. And the second one that we did is we revisited Codenames Duet, which we haven't done in ages. And it holds up. Everyone knows Codenames. Everyone loves Codenames. But Duet is really clever in the way that it you're not doing teams, and so you're just giving clues to each other. And so you would be familiar with the when you form two teams, when you play OG code names, you have the key card. And so the team captain from each team looks at the key card. So I know where the red spies are. They know where the blue spies are, and we know where each other's spies are. We also know where the assassin is. Well, when you play duet, you actually sit across from each other, and the key card goes to the side, and I see one side and the other person sees the other side. But they're actually not entirely the same. So one side will have, I think, 8 spies. The other side will have 7 spies. Or is it? And the object is in 9 rounds to uncover all 15 spies. But also on my side, there's 3 assassins. And on the other person's side, there's 3 assassins. Now, one of them is actually a common assassin. It's actually in the exact same spot for both. But the other two are random. And so what ends up happening is you're giving clues to the other person and trying to chain together the word association and give them 3 words or 2 words with a single clue. But where I can see the assassins are for me is not where the assassins are for Jen. And so you've got to sort of completely, when I'm receiving clues from Jen, I have to completely forget about the key card for a moment and just work on the words themselves.
Yeah.
And it's really good. So once you've got the hang of that and you've got these little markers that signify once you've finished a turn, you move one off and there's 9 that when you play the base game, you just get 9 rounds to try and uncover all 15 spies. Then they've introduced these missions. And so it's a map with these lines connecting various cities. And you start off by doing the first one, which is 9-9. So you've got 9 clues and you're allowed to make 9 mistakes. But then you might go to another city where you might have 10 rounds, but you're only allowed 2 mistakes. And a mistake is obviously when you select an innocent bystander instead of a spy. If you pick the assassin, then it's game over regardless. But the little tokens you have will have for the innocent bystander, because you can't place the innocent bystander token on the whole card, because what's an innocent bystander for me is not an innocent bystander for Jen necessarily. So I have these really small picture of an innocent bystander with an arrow pointing to the direction. So this was an innocent bystander for me, but it's not necessarily an innocent bystander for the other person. And so that sort of mixes things up a little bit. So you can sort of bounce around from city to city and try different challenges. You might have like 12 rounds, but you're only allowed to make 3 mistakes. You might have only 7 rounds, but you're allowed 5 mistakes. And it just increases or just messes with the level of difficulty a little bit and sort of messes with the strategy. If you've only got a limited number of rounds, but you're afforded a few more mistakes than normal, you can sort of swing for the fences and try for a word association of 4 words or 3 words, as opposed to sort of playing it safe and just plodding through. But they were just 2 little games we chucked in the suitcase when we went on a little road trip. And it really just scratched the itch of just doing something instead of just vegging out and watching TV or sitting on our phones let's just play a quick game before bed. And we played probably about 6 or 7 rounds of code names, because we were reminded of just how solid that game is and how much we really, really enjoyed it.
It happens, eh? Like, go back and play something you haven't played in ages, like, wow, it still holds up. Like,
yeah, it's awesome.
So I got to play code names at Comic-Con, but it was code names XL. Have you seen that thing?
Yeah.
Like, the cards are huge. It's great.
Oh, really?
My dog ate my glasses last week, so I can't see very much. So playing Codenames XL was great because I could like see the cards really easily. But yeah, same premise, like, but just a bigger version. There was no difference in the game at all. But yeah, it was kind of cool.
That's cool.
So what's been sizzling, Mike, for you? What have you been playing, man?
I played a few games, mate. We're lucky enough to have a 4-day weekend, so that means games definitely come out. Jules ended up coming over and taught me and a few friends Trailblazers, which nice. I really enjoyed. I love my tile laying games. I didn't do great in it. As we were playing, I kept having people arrive at the house. I kept having to get up and say hi to people, introduce people to each other and things like that. So I kept getting distracted. That's why I did badly. No other reason.
Also, when you were when you were getting up, they were moving all your tiles around.
Exactly, exactly. It's exactly.
It's their fault.
But it looks really like it's a great game. Like I think it's probably sucked me in. I'd be interested to buy it because it looks like a lot of replayability. It's fun tiling, trying to make tracks work in different ways together. And different sort of objectives come out game to game. I know we've spoken about it enough, so I won't go on about it, but Trailblazers was great. I really enjoyed it. And definitely think there's a lot of game there and definitely my kind of game. It was a lot of fun. But for a game that hasn't come out in a while, which you've all spoken about, the one for me was having a few people over, games sort of stop and start, and then you get left with two people sometimes. I was like, oh, well, let's go to the two-player shelves and see what we can find. And a game I haven't played in months, but I really thoroughly enjoy, is Royal Visit, which is a great Rainer Knizia game where you're both sort of having a tug of war across the table, playing cards to move bits up and down the cards. But every different, you know, meeple has a different rule that works with them. You can move them in different ways. So you're just sort of messing with each other, moving bits up and down the table. And that was a really good classic to come out. It's a reskinned game. It used to have a bit of a more of a risque theme back in the day. So they've re-released it as, you know, you're trying to bring the king into your area. And it's fun. Like, you've got two guards on either side of the king. And the king can't pass the guards. And then you've got a joker and you've got a wizard. And they both got special abilities to mess with the other characters as well. And you want to get the king into your area, but he can't pass the guard. So you have to move the guard all the way down, then move the king down. And you're all just playing cards and just you play this really good hand and you think you've really got it. And you've got a bunch of guys down your area and you're nearly there. But then your opposition plays these cards and moves everything all the way on the other side of the map and just undoes everything that you did. It's a lot of fun. It's a really good sort of backwards and forwards sort of game and great two-player game. Great two-player game. That was really – have you guys played that one?
I haven't, no.
No, I'm no, frantically looking up the risque theme for the other one.
Yeah. I went in there. Probably not podcast – friendly. I can't remember it exactly.
Really? Well, but it's as well.
It is a bit risque, but they had to retheme it to a royal visit instead of trying to pull interesting people into clubs, I believe.
Yeah,
it was.
Okay.
It's a great game, good strategy, and like even the few people I played with on the weekend, they all played very, very differently because there's a few different strategies you can go for. So it's really interesting seeing how everyone plays this tug of war game differently. And I haven't played any other tug of war games in the board game world. So this tug of war card game is just a nice little niche that I think fits really, really well. I really enjoy it. Another game that got some play a few times recently is Let's Summon Demons, which is a little box game that I picked up from Gen Con. I was having a chat with someone there and he said, look, whatever you do, buy the game. It's $20. And even in Australia, I think you can get it for about $25. And it's basically got the same sort of feel as your Mochikoro, your Space, just with less maintenance. It's circular cards, which is a bit different. All the cards look like coasters.
Yeah.
And I think it's up Adrian's alley, to be honest. I reckon Adrian would really like it. It's
he summons demons on a regular basis.
He summons demons all the time. And that's what the game's sort of about. It's about like trying to collect boys and girls and animals and sacrifice them to raise demons. And it's that same sort of game where you're trying to collect cards with certain numbers on them. So that way when other people roll that number, you're getting benefits. There's a lot of take that in it. So there's quite a bit of interaction because you can pick up a card that means you can steal souls from another player, and souls are currency, and the aim of the game is to summon three demons by the end of the game. But even some of the demons have special abilities. Like there's a serpent demon, and if you summon him, if you can roll snake eyes, two ones on your turn, you just win the game automatically. There's stuff like that in there. So that's never going to happen, but the moment it does, everyone just flips the table and loses their minds, and it's a fun thing. It's like, oh, that's so unfair. You win straight away. But you know what? I risked it to build this card, and I have to roll snake eyes on my turn. The probability of that's pretty crazy. But it plays five people and goes along really, really quickly, and I think like one of my loves about Zombicide is that all the characters are based off other people, and this is the same thing. Like you see, there's a character based off He-Man. There's a character based off the Heart Kid from Captain Planet. There's Donald Trump's in there. There's a bunch of horror movie references in there as well. It's really fun, and for a game that's $25, it fits in my little tiny bag that I carry around to game days. With all my small games in there, and it's a rip game. Plays 5 people in about half an hour, 40 minutes. Even Jules got into it.
Why does the artwork remind me of an Atari game, like an Atari box?
It's got that retro feel to it, which I really enjoy as well.
Get it now, and you'd swear it was an Atari game for the
But it's simple, you know what I mean? Like, you have to spend 3 souls to buy a new card, and the cards you're collecting are to generate more souls. Mm-hmm. And to win the game, you have to have 3 demons and 10 souls. But to raise a demon, mostly, you have to sacrifice 3 of the cards that you've already bought. So you do that at the risk of not being able to stop. If I've got all these cards and they're helping me earn demons earn souls every round, but then I sacrifice them to raise this demon, well, I'm not getting those souls anymore. So you have to sort of try to figure out, you know, what you want to prioritize.
Right. But
that's a great game. Really, really fun. And just 5 players, small box, $20-odd. Like, how do you go wrong? And that's Let's Summon Demons. But my sizzle game today is going to be another little game I picked up from AEG. It's called That Old Wallpaper. And like I said, I love my small box games and I love tile laying games, and this is both of those. And one of the mechanics I've said before that I'm funny about is bidding, like any game with bidding. But this game has a really cool blind bidding mechanic. So basically, you lay as many cards down as there are players. And each card is a tile that you're going to build into your area. And the cards are split up into sort of 4 sections. The 2 sides have small images on them, and the top and the bottom have large images on them, or half the image. And you're basically getting these cards and you're matching sides to sides, tops and bottoms to tops and bottoms, to create this pattern on the board. But the way you collect the cards is what I really like in the game, because if you're playing 5 people, you lay 5 of these cards down in a row. And you each have cards ranging from number 1 to 10. So you got 10 cards, which you shuffle up and take 5 at a time. So I don't know what numbers you have. You don't know what numbers I have. If the end card I really, really want, on the right side is your high end, on the left side is your low end, meaning if I want to get a card from the low end, I have to bid the lowest number. If I want to get a card from the high end, I have to bid the highest number. And if you want to get something in the middle, you want to sort of try to bid the lowest number. So everyone sort of puts their number down simultaneously, flips over at the same time, and you see what card you got. And you have those moments like, oh man, I can't believe you played a 7, I played an 8, I thought you were going to go for that. And it's got that really fun sort of feel to it, which I really, really like. And there's times where if a card comes out, look, the theme, honestly, I can't remember what the theme is. It's something about building an old wallpaper. The theme is really like just old, pasted on.
Crappy wallpaper.
Yeah.
That's what it is, right?
But if a card comes out and it has a red circle in the middle, it means you have to pull out another card. And if you pull another card with red circle in the middle, you have to pull another one. So that one row might have 2 or 3 cards on there, and everyone wants to bid for that one because you're going to get a bunch more cards to build into your area. So it makes it really fun. Everyone's trying to bid for these cards together. You're building this beautiful sort of picture at the end. The scoring I found really interesting. So when I said you have large images you're trying to match, large shapes you're trying to match together, and small shapes, they're in 4 different colors. And so basically you're going to have matched pictures of, you know, large and small red, large and small green, large and small yellow, so on and so forth. You add them all up, and in each color, whichever number you've scored less of is what you're actually scoring. So you have to make sure you do both. So in one of the games, there's a sun pattern, and I got 5 big suns, but I wasn't paying attention that I got no small suns. So when I had to score it, my lowest score was 0. I had to score 0 for it, which I think is a really fun little mechanic in it.
You really got to make sure you balance it out.
Absolutely. Which, when you're looking at this picture, it looks like one of those magic eye pictures, like you're going to go cross-eyed and see an image in it. Like, it's a lot going on. Like Adrian
without his glasses.
Exactly, exactly. There's a lot going on visually in it. But for a small game that plays really quickly again, I've had a lot of fun teaching this recently. People pick it up really easily. There's a lot of fun in that little bidding mechanic. There's not much downtime for people. There's some cool mechanics when you when two people put the same number down at the same time, the winner gets to, and there's a bidding order, which I won't get into, but the winner gets to choose which pile he wants, and the loser gets a memory token, which at the end of the game is basically a wild card that you can use to finish off any other shapes that you want. So it's got a lot of the good things going for it, but that old wallpaper will be my sizzling game this week because, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's new, and I think it's a really interesting little game, which I wouldn't normally look at because that old wallpaper doesn't sound like a theme I would normally go for. But once you play it, I think there's a lot of game in there, and it makes it quite fun for a nice little box tile lane game.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. How about you, Dan? What's sizzling over there?
Well, I was tossing up between which game to sizzle of two. And the reason that I didn't really want to wasn't sure whether I should sizzle or not is because neither of the games are out yet, but they are due at the end of the year. And so the first one I'm going to briefly mention is a new Phil Walker Harding game called My Shelfie. And the reason we have both of these games is we're going to be teaching them at PAX, so they're going to be like a little bit of a debut. But My Shelfie is a really fun little game. It's not polyomino, but they're just little tiles. And imagine a lounge room floor that you've just moved into a new house, as both of you guys have, and you've put all your stuff all over the lounge room floor, and you're trying to work out what's the best way to stack these items into your shelf. And so everyone has a seven by six, but it's like a Connect Four little thing, the vertical plastic thing that sits in front of everyone.
It's just a giant calyx, right? Basically, it sits in front.
Pretty much, yeah. And then all the items are laid out on the lounge room floor and the living room floor. And there are books, there are trophies, there's plants, there's cats, and there's one other item. I think it's photographs, and they're all of a certain color. And so there are a couple of public objectives that when you take one, two, or three items off the living room floor, and they must be on the edge, kind of like Mahjong style, so you can't reach into the middle. If you can slide one, two, or three of these objects out of the center arrangement, then you can then place them into one column of your shelf, and so that you're dropping them vertically straight down into your shelf from the top, just like when you play Connect Four. And so there will be some public objectives, and the public objectives might be the first person to have four in a row three times in your shelf, you'll gain 8 points, and the next person who does it gets 6 points, the next person who does it gets 4 points, for instance. Or it might be that if you can have a complete row and that features at least one of every color, and if you do that twice and you're the first person, you'll get 8 and the second person gets 6. So there's some public objectives to get to score points. But everyone also has a personal objective, which is basically a grid of your entire shelf with, I think it's 6 or 7 different locations and what must be in that spot. And the closer you get to that objective, the more points you'll get at the end. There's also a bonus point for whoever is the first person to fill their entire shelf. If you're the first person to fill your entire shelf, you actually trigger the end game and everyone else gets one more turn. But we've actually been having a lot of fun with it. It is available on BGA as well, if anyone's interested. And I think there's been a few games going on in our Discord of this as well. Super easy to learn, really, really quick to play. But there's some really good strategies, particularly if you're trying to make rows of things, rows of a particular color or one of every color, because when you take the tiles from the middle, whether you're taking one, two, or three, you drop them all into the same column. So there's a lot of planning ahead to go, well, if my fourth one needs to be blue, then I can, and I've already got a yellow one there, then I'll take this yellow, that green, and that blue, but then I've got to drop it in the order that I need so that the blue is the fourth one. So there's a lot of planning going on, And because it is a Connect Four style, you can see everyone else's board as well. So there's a lot of open information about what someone might be going for if you want to do a bit of a hate draft. And yeah, there's not a lot to say. I mean, Phil Walker Harding does some great games, some really user friendly games, but for such a simple premise, it's a really, really clever sort of strategic game that's a lot of fun. Plays good at two, three, or four. Awesome. And really nice table presence as well. So hopefully when we set it up at PAX as well, it'll catch people's eye, and this will be a really, really good gateway game, I think.
I'm looking at the photos, and it looks fantastic. And I'm a fan of a gimmick, and I can see a little 3D couch on there. Is that a thing in the actual game?
Yes.
Why is there a little 3D couch?
I think it's where the token goes. There's also the photographs, they're actually games, and there are a couple of games that you'll actually recognize as well.
Oh, is it? On some of the original, the original that I played was all Cranio games, which
I think
that they probably changed for.
I think they've changed it now licenses. Because I can see Sagrada, I can see Carcassonne. Yeah. And it's funny because it's got that style. That's the other color. Yeah. So if you're familiar with the box art of some, even though it's quite small, you'll see the colors and you'll pick it straight away as to what that game is. So they've given some little homage to some of the more popular games in the hobby. So that's my shelfie. But the game that I've decided at the last minute that I will actually sizzle is Wayfarers of the South Tigris. We've been fortunate enough to get a copy from Garfield Games of this, which again we will be showcasing at PAX and teaching it to anyone who wants to learn it. But Wayfarers of the South Tigris is the first in the South Tigris trilogy, of which I think it's Scholars and Inventors will be coming out in the coming years. They've already announced that, but in Wayfarers of the South Tigris, you play these explorers that it's set in the 820 AD, where exploration was big. And essentially what you are doing in the game is you're exploring the land, you're exploring sea, and you're actually exploring the night sky as well, which is the three things that that explorers in that time were actually sort of navigating around the globe by. And it's interesting because the game actually incorporates meeples and dice. So it's not just all meeples like it is. In fact, you only start with a couple of meeples, two meeples to start with, a blue and a yellow, because there are certain areas on the board where only blue ones can go or only yellow ones can go. And later in the game, you'll unlock these green meeples as well. But interestingly, the workers themselves don't actually belong to you. The workers themselves become sort of common workers that anyone can obtain, and so the workers sort of move from player hand to player hand as they start to get used. And so on your turn, you're using either your workers, the blue and the yellow, or potentially the green, to perform actions to discover and to explore, like I said, the land. These land cards that will go on one side of your player board. There's water that will go on the other side. And then once you've discovered the ocean, some of the water cards, and you're getting like a bit of a landscape of ocean, you can then place the night sky above those as well. Could you play it as well, Adrian? You can play the night sky above the land as well, can't you? I was always putting mine on one side of the ocean, but I can't quite recall it.
No, I think you have to put it over the ocean.
Yeah.
Memory.
Anywho's, there's also the townsfolk with the Micho artwork that we love from Garfield Games, and the townsfolk you can sort of you can nestle underneath your land cards and your sea cards, and that will give you buffs and give you extra abilities with those cards, particularly towards end game scoring. But the really interesting part is the use of the dice as well. So you start with four dice, which you roll at the start of your turn, at the start of the round essentially, and then you don't manipulate them at all. But the dice go onto the part of your player board that represents your caravan, which is kind of the way that your explorers are moving, if you like, and they're moving land, they're moving the ocean, or they're going to the observatory to discover the night sky. And the caravan is essentially a grid, which tells you or dictates what you can do with any dice number from 1 to 6. But during the game, you can purchase these upgrades to upgrade your caravan, which gives you more functionality or more actions with those dice. So at the start, you're quite limited to what you can do. But towards the end, you can actually, it doesn't really matter what dice you have. If you've got things on your caravan grid, that your one can then be also a two, or the two can be a three, and then the three can be a four, then that gives you so many different more options as to what you do. As you're exploring, again, the land, the sea, or navigating by the night sky. There's a lot packed into this game, so I'm not even going to be able to sort of get across everything. The center of the board is that's your game track, and the first person to get to the end of the track sort of triggers the end game. But it's really interesting because they're all these different sections, and each section will give you benefits. It might give you an upgrade on your player board. It might give you an upgrade it might even give you an additional dice, for instance. It might give you some what they call inspiration cards, which again give you bonuses and things to work towards and can kind of
the green worker.
Yeah, the green worker as well. Yep, which is a great bonus. And then there's also these three guilds, the guilds of science, trade, and exploration. And we have these influence tokens, and you can place influence on these guilds, which will give you a bonus at the end of the game. Whoever has the most influence in one of those guilds, you'll get points. But you can also pull those influence off to help you manipulate the dice or help you travel across the ocean when you might not have enough actions to have that action. So I think Jules really loaded up on a couple of those guilds and sort of reaped the benefits of that towards the end. But the main player board with those sections, every time you move from one section to another, you're doing that because you're journaling your progress. So you're an explorer. You've explored some of the land. You've explored some of the sea. You've explored some of the night sky with the constellations, and you're logging comets or planets or just even just the stars. And then as you move from one section to another with the journaling action, there'll be an objective. And if you've met that objective, let's say you've discovered at least three harbors, or you've gone at least four open water areas, or you've traveled to at least two cities, you can then move into the next section. And everyone can move in any direction you want, but the way that the central board is laid out, you do have a bit of freedom in which path you take. The first person who crosses certain thresholds will be the first person to get the benefit, like the green meeple that Adrian mentioned. But anyone can sort of move across, and the objectives you have to meet get more and more specific as you move across the track. And that as well, also the path you take to get from one end to the other will influence what you actually do. So if you're taking, let's say, one particular path which you need to discover, you'll need to discover at least five harbors before you can get to the next section. Well, then you're not going to discover as much land as anyone else. Maybe you're going to focus on harbors. But if someone else is doing that, then it might be a bit of a bun fight when the cards are out to actually secure that harbor before someone else does. But there may be a townsperson who will actually help you get harbors. And so it's a fascinating. We've only played the once so far. I'm making it my oath to play the solo mode as well. But it is available on TTS. So if you haven't backed it, I think it's expected in December 2022. But it is on TTS. The link is actually on their Kickstarter page. I highly recommend checking it out. Yeah. If you're already familiar with the West Kingdom series or the North, then all the iconography and the way that the scoring mechanisms work and the bonuses combo into each other, you'll already be familiar with that, and you are going to love this. What did you think of it, Adrian?
Well, Paladins is my favorite one that I've played out of all those games so far. I haven't played Explorers yet, even though I saw you guys playing it at the retreat that time. But I got those kind of vibes, that kind of push and pull thing like in Paladins, where it's like you have to do stuff, but then you lose out on other things, and it's kind of like other people are doing those other things, and you're trying to grasp at straws to kind of keep going and think ahead. Especially planning ahead is a massive thing. So I blocked myself in so badly because I was just not experienced enough with the game and what I was doing. But it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good game. I really liked the theme. I liked the endgame scoring cards and stuff and the mechanisms that all kind of interwoven into each other.
Yeah.
It was really good.
You can tell that Sam and Shem have done a lot of work into the actual, the history of the region mm-hmm. and what the sort of, what those wayfarers, what those explorers were doing. I can't remember some of the things that he was telling us at the time, but as Sam was actually giving us a tutorial on it, and he was saying, well, we do this and you can undo this, this or this, because that's all they could do during in that era sort of thing. But yeah. I like the fact that the central track and the way your people, everyone's sort of moving along this track, potentially in different directions, and the objectives that you're going to be faced with as you keep going along that track are going to push everyone in different directions. And so yeah. I might be focusing on one thing, Connor's focusing on a completely different thing, and it's for who can meet those objectives first, as opposed to everyone trying to do the same thing and fighting over pieces. There were some parts where we were almost all doing different things. It was just who was doing it more efficiently, because we knew the end game was going to trigger soon.
I remember the first like two or three rounds, I refused to buy any boats. I was like, nah, staying on the land. And then I was like, oh, no, I need boats.
I need to explore the ocean. Yeah.
It was good. It was enjoyable.
Yeah. So I want to get a couple more playthroughs under my belt before PAX so that we can teach it. But, yeah, so that'll be my sizzle this week. But Wayfarers of the South Tigris and also my Shelfie come along to PAX on the 7th, 8th, and 9th. And, yeah.
Fair play.
And learn.
Nice.
Hey, Connor.
Yo.
Have you bought anything from Advent Games lately?
Oh, have I bought anything from Advent Games? I just went and filled my cart up with a slew of games from Advent.
It's easy to do because they've got a fantastic range of games, they've got great prices, and they've got flat rate shipping, be it in the cities or regional.
And the website is just super easy to navigate. They've always got an up-to-date catalogue, including games that have just dropped.
Yeah, and they've got all of the categories split out. So for me, I can just go, bam, solo games. That's my list. I don't need to look at anything else. And I don't have to worry about how long it's going to be to get there, because Dean is always on it. It ships pretty quickly. And within a few days, it's usually bang on my doorstep.
And speaking of being places, Dean is an avid supporter of our Sydney Game Days. So we thank Dean and the Advent crew for doing that.
He is a dead set legend. And I'm sure if you get along to the next Sydney Game Day, which isn't planned yet, but will be soon, you could hear Dean do a rendition of... he probably can't do Informer as good as me, but... He'll do something, I'm sure.
And he's also a member of the deep-voiced brotherhood like you and me, Mitch, so...
He is. Although, if we were ranking, he'd probably be
both. Oh, I do. Golden tonsils.
Check out adventgames.com.au for all of your board gaming supplies, and send Dean a little message, because I'm sure he loves them.
With that, we shall move on to the question of the pod and a bit of a recap of... last week's question, which was, what are your favorite board game innovations? So we had a lot of answers, and some of them are really interesting, because the one that I thought was my favorite, I didn't even think of. And I'll read that out straight away. It's from Lucas, and he said, dual layer boards, keeping everything in spot. I could not fathom or imagine playing Barrage without the dual board. Couldn't. I don't know. It's kind of weird because I never really knock anything. I'm not like knocking stuff around, but I feel like it's just nicer. It's all locked in place.
I still remember the first time I ever saw a Scrabble board that actually had a grid on it where the tiles went in, and I just went, oh, that's genius, because I'm one of those guys who's always straightening the tiles whenever they get moved slightly. So dual layer boards is just a genius move by the industry.
I think automatically now, if you see dual layer boards on any game, it just raises your interest by 15%. It's like, it must be good if it's got dual layer boards.
Now we're seeing triple layer boards as well.
Carnegie has triple layers, so there you go.
That's crazy.
We'll have octo layer boards in a few years, I reckon. But yeah, Gene said that game trays are also a welcome innovation to the crowdfunding space. But I think that any good insert
Good storage solution. Yeah.
Any good storage solution.
But not even just the insert itself, but if you can take it out and it doubles on the table as well.
Yes.
That's genius. And it's funny because you got people like Broken Token or Folded Space who made them. And I think the industry sort of cottoned on now and was like, well, maybe we can do that ourselves. And that's where sort of game trays have kicked off. But yeah, anything that doubles as a holder on the actual table as well, not just for neatening and putting things away, I think is great.
And Draven said that, he says, I think the LCG model for card games is a great innovation. There is all of the excitement of an evolving card pool, but the barrier to entry is lower because everyone has access to the same card pool. You win by building a better deck and playing well, not by being able to afford the best cards.
Yeah.
Which is so true of, like, you know, the Magic the Gathering, I suppose, and Pokemon and things like that. Like, whereas the LCG model is a great model. And even for co-op and stuff as well, like, it's a great model. So, yeah, LCG is a great one, so.
I actually agree mostly with Chris. Chris was saying that he reckons app integration is one of the best things. And I love the idea of app integration. And I think that's going to evolve more and more, especially with things like hidden information or maps that change or things like that. Like even in Gloomhaven, when I was playing Gloomhaven, downloading an app that wasn't official that got you to slowly open the map up as you went through, I thought was absolutely genius and kept the excitement there and not knowing what's coming. I thought that was really cool. I agreed with that one very strongly.
Yeah. I gravitated towards, I think it was Uberface on Discord. He said that he thought the entire genre of legacy games or campaign games is a fascinating of the more recent sort of innovations. He says that concept of changing the way a game is played or adding or removing components or rules through multiple plays was so foreign previously in the board game world, and now some games are considered some of the best. And for me, I found that using Zombie Kids Evolution as an example was a great way to teach my son some of the more complex mechanisms in games by introducing slowly and going, okay, here's how you play the base game, and now we're going to add this, and there's a new character who's got a special ability, and before you know it, he's playing this really complex game with different. Each character might have multiple actions, and the level of difficulty is sort of ramped up from what originally. But he's completely eased into it, and I think other games that are similar, just from as a board gamer who's going to spend a bit of money on these games, you get more bang for your buck out of a campaign game. And I like the way that a lot of those sort of campaign or legacy style games, a lot of effort has gone into the story because I am a themer. So I love the story and I love seeing it unfold as the game goes on rather than here's a theme and here's the game. I want to sort of explore the game and now here's a twist because of this and now we're going to go over here and you take what you've gained from the previous couple of missions, if you like, and apply that to this now. And I love that sort of style of legacy game or campaign game whereas a big sort of tapestry, and it sort of unfolds as you play. You might play 10 sort of 20 times, value for money.
I think the coolest thing about legacy games is us three can all play with our own groups and come back and have ended up with a different game altogether.
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the coolest things that we can get together after playing the same board game and talk about how our experiences completely branched out differently and we ended up with, we created a different character or we had a different ending. I reckon that's really cool. It's like when you talk to your mates about a video game you liked and which path you took, like I think that's cool. And you have that want to go back and play it again and get a reset pack so you can play it again and choose path B and see where that takes you. I think that's a really cool thing that brings us one step closer to that video game experience that I think a lot of people look for.
You get an added level of ownership because this is my game. I'm going to play the way I want to play.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Dan and I have both done Patreon pods about legacy games. Did you do Aeon's End, Dan? And I did Pandemic?
Yeah, and that's
kind of interesting because finding out through Sarah, like how different my game was crazy. I couldn't either. We were laughing like hysterically because we were just completely like bemused at how the game was so different. Even though it's on rails to a degree, like it's just interesting to see how far those rails go.
Mm.
Very interesting. So, So that kind of brings us around to a new question of the pod for next week. And with what has been happening, and we've been discussing earlier on with both of us doing a Comic-Con and teaching Gateway games to people, and also Sydney has just done their Comic-Con and taught Gateway games to people as well for 2 days. I would like to know, what was your Gateway game that like got you into the hobby? Not just like your Scrabble or your Monopoly or whatever, something that just you just realized, like, I want to play these games. I want to find more games. So I would like to know your starting game that got you into
really,
the hobby.
What
and
really
also
sucked you in.
Yeah, and also maybe even just the parameters around that, how that came to be, because there's plenty of games that I play for the first time that I don't enjoy, and it could be I'm tired, it could be not the right setting or whatever, but where you were, what you were doing, and how that game just was like, I want to play more games.
Well, I know what mine was. When I first got back into the modern board gaming hobby, there was a couple of games that I picked up. One was Smash Up, one was Quirkle, but it was when I, and this is going to, Mike will agree with me, when I saw Will Wheaton's tabletop on YouTube, when they played Pandemic, I went, I have to get that game. And yeah. Pandemic, hook, line, and sinker, I'd never played a co-op game before. And then when I showed my friends, they're like, what do you mean we're not playing against each other? I'm like, no, we're playing against the game. Yeah. It blew all of our minds. So I credit a lot of my early collection to Will Wheaton's tabletop show on YouTube. But Pandemic for me was hands down was my gateway drug into this hobby.
Well, mine as well, like completely. Even though I never watched the Will Wheaton tabletop Pandemic episode, I had watched the Small World episode.
Yeah.
And a couple of years before I even got into the hobby, I bought Small World and I played it with a group of friends and we had a good time, but it never made me go, I want to play more of these. I played it. It was good at the time. And I just kept playing video games, and it was just something that we played a couple of times and that was it. But it was Pandemic that just sealed it for me. Like, I played that game and just played it back to back every day, like just daily. I was loving it.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I got three of the expansions for it, and we played all of those as well. Like, it's a fantastic game to get.
Yeah. And if I'm maybe not in
2022. I don't know if it's a gateway game now. not that it's dated. It's just more. Yeah, it's a bit too like, oh, I don't want to play that. You know.
Yeah, but if I'm ever feeling a bit sort of like I've lost my mojo, I'm not really sure what to play, I'll still break it out, because it's a bowl of warm chicken soup for me. It's like a comfort game.
Absolutely. Mine, I think I mentioned before, mine was Munchkin. But, it's what it represented for me. Like, I was at an ex-girlfriend's house and one of her friends came over. And, you know, back then, just the normal thing was, oh, let's just all hang out, watch TV. And she goes, oh, do you want to play a board game? I'm like Scrabble? She's like, I don't know. I've got this thing over here. And just seeing this fun game for me. And, look, I take that something that was always made for me. I love being a bit of a smart ass and you know, a bit of table talk, and seeing a game that offered so much interaction with each other and played in a small space. And I think it was like Munchkin. Yeah, I enjoyed it. But the idea of, oh, we don't have to organize a board game night. Like, hey, I got this thing over here. Do you just want to do this for now? Let's interact this way. And let's spend some time making memories and having a laugh. And that for me was the main thing. Like, oh my God, where has this been all my life? And then pulling out a game after we played the Bloody Inn back then as well, and a few other games. And then I started researching them, and it just led to this big spiral to the monstrosity you see today. So Munchkin was definitely just a cool example of how different board games can be. And then I got into the thinky things later. But yeah, it was just a really good eye-opener.
It's kind of funny because it's not jarring in a negative way. It's like jarring in a positive way, because you don't expect games. Do you know what I mean? Like, back then, I was like, oh, I'll play the game. Like, yeah, okay. And then I was like, this is amazing. Like, and I played a lot of 500 and poker and all different types of poker and different card games. And but then to go to that and to play a game, and it was like, I was just blown away by it. It was really
cool.
Cool. Well, yeah, please let us know your story behind your gateway game and how you got into the hobby would be also equally interesting. So, and with that, we shall move on to the oaths. So, oaths time. I've got mine done and dusted. Food Chain Magnate. Fantastic game. I'm going to get it out more. I'm trying to organize a game day very soon, and that's kind of going to be one of the pieces that I really want to try and get played at far. I think it goes up to five. So I want to play a max play account, see what everyone else thinks of it. It will be very interesting.
Bring a sleeping bag.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, my new oath, man, like we have a lot of stuff going on. We're going to PAX. We're teaching a lot of games, and I one of those games is actually in my top 10 and I've never played it in physical form. And I would like to play it in physical form. Not myself, not that I've gone to the Astro Plane to play it. I've only ever played it online. And I would like to teach it to other people because I think it's a fantastic game. And I would like to at least teach a couple of groups Pampero while we are at PAX.
Ah, very cool. Because
we got sent that to showcase from Ape Games. So thank you very much, Ape Games. Really appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic game. And I know that there's a lot of people that like those kind of games that are going to be at PAX. So it'll be a great experience to play it and show people what it's all about. Because it's in my top 10 without playing it on the table for a reason.
That's pretty good.
The mechanics behind it are fantastic. Like, and it's really fantastic game and a great design. So I'd only see that thing climbing the ladder, which will be interesting. So when it comes to that time of making my list again, which I'll be in full panic mode.
I can't wait to see all of our top tens this year.
Really interesting.
I know. I don't know. It's going to be crazy, but it will be interesting. There's been so many good games, and they're not necessarily games that came out this year. They're games that maybe came out a while back, but people have only played this year. So that's been some big games played. So, but yeah, that'll be my new oath. And like, you know, while I'm there, I might as well sling on there as a bolt on, but we got the Nile expansion, the Nile Affair for Barrage. At some point I'd like to play that with a group of four, maybe at my house, maybe at PAX, who knows, but I played it at two players and it's absolutely fantastic. So I'd like to talk more about that in the future. Cool. So what about you, Dan?
Nope. No, my oath was to play Sleeping Gods. And it's funny because the other before we left on our road trip, I did have a couple of hours in the afternoon to play it. And I just thought I didn't really want to just rush through Sleeping Gods. And I don't even want to – I've made the mistake before of – trying a sort of a campaign style game and just playing the first mission and then going, yep, oath done. And then never actually returning. So I want to do Sleeping Gods properly and play at least a couple of the missions. I was surprised. I had a look at the rules as well. And it's got like eight different characters. And I think the characters to play all the characters as well. Yeah. So I'm thinking of maybe seeing if I can rope Jack into just helping me, and I'll probably have to do a lot of the shepherding as well. But if he can have four characters, I can have four characters, we can maybe play it together. We've still got a few days left of school holidays, so I might try and rope him into the oath. If no other reason than when I'm unsuccessful, I can blame my seven-year-old that I didn't do it.
I was envisaging your version of helping. It's like, hey, get me some chips and hold my drink. Thanks for your help.
He does it. I'll have him have his attention for about 5 minutes, then he'll want to wander off and start playing Minecraft. But so I'm going to double down, but my double down is to actually play Wayfarers solo. I had a look at it.
Don't blame Jack for that.
No. I've had a look at it. It's really, really interesting. And Sam says that the AI play is very, very simple. Having said that, the solo rules in the book are actually four pages worth. So we'll see how simple it is. But while Wayfarer is still fresh in my mind, I really want to have a crack at that solo. So I, Dan Harris, where, well, the next time I'm on the pod, I'll have played Sleeping Gods and given that a fair shake, but also Wayfarers of the South Tigris solo mode.
Nice.
Awesome. Sick.
And Mike, yourself, man. Yeah, it does.
My oath was to play my new shiny copy of Dog Park, which I did. I need to play it again. It's a beautiful game. Production's beautiful. Game's beautiful. When I first – look, I'll admit that when I played it, I was a bit tired. My brain wasn't 100% there. That may have affected my feelings about it. The first half of the game, I felt disappointed. I thought there was going to be more game to it. I felt it was a bit – too simple, and I thought it was going to be a bit more Euro-y. Towards the end of the game, I started seeing where the game is in it and that it can have a bit more game to it. And I do know I have to play it again to when I'm properly awake. That was a big day, that one. And my energy levels were quite low. So once again, that might be affected just by my energy that day. But I didn't hate it. I just think I do need to play it again and give it another crack. My friends all really liked it, and Renata loved it. So like I said, I think it just might have been my headspace at the time, but I need to try Dog Park. But I did successfully complete that one. My new oath. Oh boy, I am so excited. It's Zombicide, Undead or Alive. I've added to the massive Zombicide pile in my house, and my Calyx is trembling underneath the weight of it. When I first backed this, I've said it before, I don't read all the Kickstarter stuff. I look to see if I'm interested, and just seeing Zombicide, I knew I was going to go all in. Western isn't normally my sort of theme that I'd go for, so I was like, oh, I'll buy it, and I'll see how it goes, and I'll sell it if I don't like it. But having a look at the rules, having a look at how they've changed a bunch of things in the game, what they've pulled from other old versions of the game, how they've changed some systems that might have before been difficult, or they've just, I think, changed enough to make it feel really different and justify its place on the shelf potentially permanently. Like, without playing and just having a look at how the different rules they've made, I am so excited. It just sounds really interesting, very thematic. Some of the expansions look really fun too. I just think it's going to be a really, really cool version of Zombicide, and I'm just super excited to check it out and report back of all the new changes they've done to it. Just a heads up, it's probably going to be a sizzle and oath reveal at the same time next time. I'm not going to lie. But if I'm going to swear anything right now, that pile of Zombicide is staring right at me. So I, Michael Faruja, swear to play Zombicide, Undead or Alive by the time on the podcast next.
Nice.
I can't wait to hear that.
Sounds, yeah, I'm excited to hear about that, because I actually, the very few Western games I've played, I've really enjoyed. Like, like really been great games, great experiences. So I'd like to see what they do in the Zombicide universe.
Well, I'll admit, I did actually hover over the back button for a little while. Kickstarter.
So cool. Even stuff like they've given factions now, so even your heroes can be one of four factions with completely different abilities, which I think is really cool, and you'll probably want one of each in your party when you go fight people. But like before, abominations were a one-hit kill. They do one damage now, but they activate an extra spawn point, so you have an extra spawn point. And even walking into a building now, no more doors to deal with, but it activates an extra spawn point. If you have 7 spawn points at once, that ends the game, you lose. So you have to really manage that properly. And the thematicness of it is you can get holy water in the game, or if you're one of the factions, they're like a bunch of priests and nuns, any water is holy water for them, and you throw it at the spawn point and it gets rid of it, which I think is just really nice. Cool thematic flair very to cool. It. And I won't go on about it now. I'm just excited. Let's finish the conversation, because I'll keep going.
It'll happen. Good. It's fine. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. And I just want to do a big shout out to our Patreons who directly support the Board Game Barbecue podcast. Like, without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do this as much as we do. Really do appreciate that. And if you would like to donate to the Board Game Barbecue, you can just visit us on patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue and check out our different Patreon pledges. But also remember, please, if you aren't keen on the Patreon thing but you want to support us in other ways, come and see us at the pre-drinks at PAX, because like I'll be drinking Mountain Dew and JD, so you can see that that's a real thing. But like, yeah, just come along, have a couple of drinks. Like, we're gonna have some food and some chats and hang out before the event, because the event's going to be very busy and everyone's going to be full on flat out. So it'll be a nice chilled out time to hang out and talk and you know, get to know everybody. But yeah, like you can support us in other ways, like Facebook community, Discord community, you know, just leave us a 5-star review on Apple Play. Is it Pod? Play Pod or whatever it's called on Apple? I can't remember what it's called. The Apple podcast thing. And then, yeah, also I think Spotify does or is introducing reviews and stuff soon. Yep. So if you could leave a review on there, that'd be fantastic. But yeah, thank you very much. And all the links to the games and bits will be in the show notes. So thanks for supporting us and appreciate that. We shall see you on the next one. Good night.
All right, cheers.
See you guys.
Bye. All right, are we good? Here we go. Welcome to
episode. I'm good.
God damn it.
Oh, sorry, Andrew.
It's okay. We're rolling this still. It's not getting it.
We're rolling.
Welcome to episode.
Ready when you're...
I'm ready, man.
Sorry.
Tired. It's okay. No, I don't even want to say anything now. I'm just going to sit here silently for a while until the joke gets too old.
No, you're not. You're Adrian. You're not silently.
This is true. Silent ninja. I'm talking.
That's good.
All right. It's all good now.
Sorry, I did it again.
It's all right. Britney Spears me, right? Oops, I did it again.
No, I was going to I Kanye too.
I don't know what that means at all.
No, your brother's going to hit you, baby, one more time.
No. You're meant to speak, and I go, Munchkin is the greatest, deserves the winner, is the greatest gateway game of all time.
2022. Lovely. You're getting excited about your lawn there, Adrian?
Yeah. I thought you were talking about Dan's hair.
Is that a euphemism?
Could have both.